Okay.
And shall we will begin. And shall we begin. Consider the following questions. This is a question I actually got this week. I was frying up egg beaters when I realized that I accidentally bought the kind with cheddar cheese, which is not kosher. Okay, is the pot treif? How do I kosher it? Those are very, very good questions. And in the frying, you know, that you bought egg beaters or cheddar cheese egg beaters, called the OU. The OU said, no, sorry, those are real cheddar cheese. They're not kosher. So the question is, how do you kosher? We're going to get to koshering in general, but how do you kosher a pan that you fried something in? Okay, can you kosher it? So we're going to learn one of the fundamental questions that we have to ask, we're going to learn about today. That's related to the second question. I accidentally washed, this happens to everyone, this is actually the same question we had last week, we're going to discuss it today from another direction. I accidentally washed a flasic spoon, fork, whatever, with emulsic dishes. What do I do? Okay? Now let's ask a third question, which is also extremely relevant. I was taking chicken soup. Sure. What is it?
The second Shema. We all bought the first Shema.
Oh, whoops.
You know where it is?
It's probably this side of the library, facing this way, all the way across. Okay? Let's say the following case, which is actually a case that comes up quite a bit also. I'm spooning out chicken soup, right? And I realize that accidentally, either I used a milchik ladle, or even sometimes more, what if I use a flasik ladle and put it in a milchik bowl? Or I accidentally had used a flasic bowl, but I was using a milchik spoon. So all those are great questions because the question then becomes, what happens to the spoon, the bowl, right? What happens to the bowl? Well, and you would think that they're the same. You would think that, correct?
No.
Why don't you think that? You don't think anything granted anywhere. I'm training you well, actually. It's great.
Okay.
What? What about the bowl? What if it's an earthenware bowl?
You have to tell what happens to the bowl.
Right. In case of earthenware, if the bowl is earthenware and it's treif, then you have to destroy it, throw it out. But if it's not treif, the question is, how would we decide whether it would become treif or not? Can you pass me the last sheets? Okay. So the first thing we're going to discuss is the halakha call. Let me see if I can find it here. So how does food transfer? Meaning, I'm sorry, I'll take this another way. How does taste transfer from one entity to another? So in the first case, I have egg beaters, okay? How does cheddar cheese egg beaters get into my pot? Now, what if I poured it, thank you, that's very good. So how does it treif up the pot? What if I pour the treif egg beaters in, and then realized, before I lit the flame, I realized, oh my God, those are treif egg beaters. There are cheddar cheese in them. They're clumped, kind of give it away, but I guess I didn't notice. Would the pot be treif?
If you didn't heat it up yet.
If you didn't heat it up yet, then?
It's cold.
It's cold, okay? So the first thing we need to acknowledge universally is, yes? I'm out. If you could share with Hilding. Okay, you guys can share together. The first thing we need to acknowledge is you need to have heat. Okay? But not only do you need to have heat, in addition, you need to have something that will carry the taste from one thing to another. What would happen if I took my warm bread and put it on top of, another treif bread that's also warm? Would they become treif? One warm bread on top of another warm bread? Well, that's not necessarily the case because the halakha is, no, you don't think so, right? It doesn't sound like it, right?
It depends what's in the bread.
Well, the question is, the halakha defines you need to have medium that either is liquid transfers taste, right? So in our case, the egg beaters, right, when you warm them up, so you have cheddar cheese, and then you have egg beaters, and the egg beater transfers the taste of the cheddar cheese into the pot itself, or another example would be the cheddar cheese itself. The cheddar cheese itself is fatty. So fatty foods also transfer taste. Why? Because let me think of this empirically, as you know. When you warm up something fatty, when it becomes hot, what happens?
It melts.
It melts, right. Very good. And the fat transfers from one place to another. Okay? There's a very famous story of the Rav Soloveitchik. One day his wife went, wherever. Right? So she comes home and she finds that they're eating salami sandwiches on milchik plates. Right, so she looks at them and starts screaming, "What are you doing? You're tripping in my kitchen." They said, "Well, we don't understand. It's cold, it's dry, it doesn't matter." And they were 100% right, halachically. Cold salami cannot trafe up milchut plates.
I bet you got rid of them.
Yeah, she said, "Get out of my kitchen before you trafe it up. Get out of, you know." So it's a very famous story about Rav Soloveitchik. Okay, so the first thing you have to know is anything cold or dry does not transfer taste at all. You accidentally pour cold milk into a milchut cup, right? You know, you give it to, I'm sorry, cold milk into a fleshy cup. I told you, right? I'm thinking about what I was doing today. Okay, you pour cold milk in a fleshy cup. What do you do?
Pour it out and wash it with soap.
How? Cold water. Right, why? If you use hot water,
it'll move it in.
That'll transfer the taste of the milk into the cup.
Now, I would also take the cup and put it up on a shelf for 24 hours.
Not necessary. Why? Because the only reason, we learned this last week, remember, why do we wait 24 hours? Because any taste that's infused into whatever the vessel is would have to become what's called tam pagum. We learned that last week, defiled taste. I apologize to those of you who are trying to listen at home and maybe even look, because it's not online yet. I'm still in the website design phase. Okay, so it'll be up there eventually. So we learned last week that if you have, let's say you cook the salami, or the plate is not good, because a plate, usually the plates that we're talking about are ceramics, right? So if you cooked salami on your milchut plate, let's say you took it and you put it in the microwave and you fried up the salami on your milchut, stoneware china, or you know whatever you're going to call it. So then that fried salami infuses taste into the china. What happens to the china? You chuck it. Why? Because and you could wait. You could leave it for 48 hours, 100 hours, but still there's salami in your milchut china that you can never get out. So let's say you did it on your, you fried it up on your, oh, I don't know. Let me try to think of a good example.
A metal plate.
Not in the microwave.
Now, let's say you fried it up on your cast iron skillet. Okay? You fried it up in your cast iron skillet. Well, that's not even a good example. I don't want to use that example. So let's say you had your metal bowl, right? Or you were stirring in your soup. You were using while you were frying up your salami a milchik fork. Okay, so oops, can you kasher a fork usually? If it's metal, you can kasher the fork, no problem. But we learned that in order to kasher it, before we kasher it, you have to wait 24 hours. Why? Why do you wait 24 hours? So that the taste infused inside the vessel becomes defiled taste, tam pagum. And that happens after 24 hours. Am I ringing the bell here?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay, fine. I mean, we did this all last week. But in your case, in the case I described, where you accidentally poured milk into your fleshy cup, no taste transfer happened. There's no infusion of any taste into your cup. Why? It's cold. So you don't have to wait. There's nothing to wait for. There's no defiling. You just rinse it out with cold water, and you put it right back up on the shelf, and you're all set to go. And that's something that's surprising to people. And it's not like a magic thing. If you know why you're waiting the 24 hours, then you'd have to wait. But in this case, you wouldn't have to wait at all because there's no infusion of taste at all. So the good rule of thumb is, if it's a temporary thing, you realize, you realize why I'm saying this, but you realize soon after you did it that you put something cold, trafe either, or milchik on fleshik, or fleshik on milchik, take it off, you rinse it with cold water, right, and you're good to go. So always a good rule of thumb, no matter what you do, if you make a mistake, rinse it with cold water. Right, because A, you got to worry about your sponges. How are you going to clean it out? Right, so you don't want the sponges to get whatever, the milchik or the fleshik. So rinse it with cold water and soap, and then even if you have to put it aside to call the rabbi, nonetheless, you're okay. Okay, so that's the rule of thumb. First of all, you need, in order to transfer taste, you need liquid, or you need a dry, you need a fatty food of some kind. You know, but if it's cold and dry, then there's no transfer of taste. And even if it's cold and wet, then there's no transfer of taste within a reasonable period of time. The second thing you need is not only liquid. What else do you need? We said heat.
Okay.
Heat.
Yeah.
What did you say?
No, you said fat.
No. Well, we said if it was fatty, also heat. Okay. Hot. Hot enough to burn it. Yad so ledebo. Where's that from? That I'm going to tell you. Very good. What does yad so ledebo mean?
Yeah.
And this is the trick. What is Yad So Let It Go? How hot is Yad So Let It Go?
Probably just can't touch it.
Wait. You or me? Right. So what is Yad So Let It Go? I mean, you have certain people that can... that it takes a long time for their hands to burn off, and some people it doesn't bother them at all. So first we're going to see the Gemara, source number one, where Yad So Let It Go is from. This concept of Yad So Let It Go appears not just in Kashrus. Where else does it appear? Where else is Yad So Let It Go relevant? Anyone know?
Cooking on Shabbos.
Cooking on Shabbos, correct. In order to define something as cooking...
I'm no genius. I see the...
It does say Shabbos, that's true. In order to define something as being cooking, as being prohibited, right, it has to be Yad So Let It Go.
Right.
Now, let's just read the Gemara. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel, the first line. Say Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel. So they were talking about oil or water, or is there a difference between oil or water? So he says, Echad Shemen Ve'echad Mayim Yad So Let It Go Asur and Yad So Let It Go Mutter. Okay, so Yad So Let It Go, if you warm it up to the point where Yad So Let It Go, the hand is scalded, the hand is burnt by it, the hand pulled back, right? That's what it means. That's prohibited, but not Yad So Let It Go is permitted. Behechidami Yad So Let It Go. So now the Gemara asks that very same question. What is Yad So Let It Go? To what degree? Amar Rechava, says Rechava, Kol Shekreso Sheltinok Nichvet. Anytime the stomach of an infant would become singed, burnt. How hot would you need in order to... They didn't test it. Don't worry, they didn't try it. How hot would it burn an infant's stomach?
Very hot.
By the way, why is that more objective than a Yad So Let It Go of an adult?
Because it hasn't had time to...
Right, infants presumably are pretty much all the same. Some people, they can... I remember when I was in New York, I would, you know, you go by the Time Out Pizza across the street from YU. This guy, he had... I guess he had burned off the feeling in his fingers to such a degree that, you know, when they put the pizza on this screen, and then at some point they have to take the pizza off the screen and put it on the bottom of the oven. So he would lift the pizza off and then pull the screen out with his bare hands out of the oven. So I guess he had burned all the feeling out of his bare hands. You know, so well, that guy's Yad So Let It Go would be like 400 degrees. So
sometimes on the food channel, when I watch Emro, he handles things from the oven, and once in a while he says, "I have asbestos hands," and that's because he's calloused or he's
right. If you do it all the time, right, then you'll really burn your hands, which I probably wouldn't recommend. I don't think it's so healthy. Nonetheless, so therefore the Gemara gives us a more objective measurement or quality or standard of Yad So Let It Go. Yad So Let It Go is more objective when we know that the stomach of a child, of an infant, is singed. Then the problem is, right, we're not going to test it. So how hot is that?
Well, we used to, long time ago, test the bottles given infant by putting drops on your own wrist.
Right.
So it was...
Now, by the way, how hot would you say that wrist...
98.6.
No, not your new wrist. How hot is that milk that you warmed up?
You want it to be just barely warm.
Just barely warm.
Just barely warm. So it'd be 100, 105 degrees.
Interesting that you say that. Exactly right. 100, 105. More than that, you'd feel it too hot. Right?
Can I ask a question?
So that means the Gemara talks about, if the Gemara says that's the temperature at which A, the Kitzav for Shabbos cooking takes place, and B, cooking, what is cooking? You're agitating the food. I mean, I'm sure we can get a chemist to come and explain what cooking is. You're heating the milk molecules to such a degree that begins to form a chemical reaction. Right?
Exactly.
Thank you. Okay, very good.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Why is it saying that you don't have it? People do it. You're aging me. I remember doing it.
Oh, yeah, no. They take the water directly from the sink and they shove it in the basin. I don't know why. They don't.
Sure, we do. Well, how long did you boil for?
I watched my
10 minutes. Anyway. Okay. Anyway. So it's interesting you say that temperature 105, 105 degrees, because the lowest temperature there's actually a gamut of poskim who say it's about the minimum one is 110 or 116 degrees. So anything more than 110 or 116 degrees, we have to treat it as if, yeah, that's called Yad So Let It Go, and therefore a transfer of taste occurred, took place. Now remember, by the way, that when you're dealing with all these things, there are shitos, which means opinions, that go from the more machmir, and the more stringent is going to be the lower temperature, all the way to the more machial, the more lenient, which are going to be the higher temperature. Because if I say, well, in order to transportation, it has to be 145 degrees, which is pretty hot, that means I had to start actually cooking it. Right? So therefore, what about our case of washing the dishes? Not that hot. It's never going to be that hot. Right? Even if you had it on absolute hot, what's the hottest it can be at the hottest water heater?
220, 240.
Exactly. 120, 140. Most people have 125. Right?
Because you don't want to hurt.
Right. And most people don't put the water at the absolute hottest temperature. So now somebody's asking me, okay, so the first question going on in my mind when they ask me, Rabbi, I accidentally washed the plastic dishes with the milk sponge or whatever. Remember, we talked about last week what one issue was. Did you use? Another issue is, how hot was the water? Because if the water, you say, well, the water, well, it was warm. Were you wearing gloves? No. Was it hot? Wasn't that hot. Not already, I know. You were using soap, right? But more importantly, the water wasn't hot enough to transfer Tom. So what am I going to tell you?
It's okay.
Fine. You understand what I'm saying? Based on the principle of Yad Soledipo, if the water is not Yad Soledipo, based on what we're going to say, then we're going to say that there was no transfer of taste, and the dishes are fine. On the other hand, if you tell me, and this actually happened this week, where my wife said to me, oh, I was washing this with the wrong thing, and I said, how hot was it? She said, I was wearing gloves. And usually if she's wearing gloves, she'll put it on hot all the way. What does she care? She can't feel it, and it's not a problem at all. Now, by the way, the gloves itself are a very interesting phenomenon, as we will soon see halakhically. Okay, but nonetheless, then we had to rely on the soap was an issue, and when was it used before is also an issue. But all of these things are taken into account when deciding how to answer a question. Okay, so therefore, whenever you call the rabbi, you should remember these facts. What were you doing? How hot was it? Right? When's the last time you used it? What else did you mention? That's pretty much it. Did you use soap?
Even if you're wearing gloves, if your furnace is set at 120, it won't go, it'll be
120. Right, that's another sniff, meaning what you're using is, you're trying to say, a rabbi is saying, I could be machmer. It's easy to be machmer to say, well, according to the most strict opinion, the Yad Soledipo is 110 degrees. And according to the most strict opinion, right, let's assume I have to be worried, maybe the you washed it before you put the soap in, and maybe there was actual need on the milchik dish. But I'm not looking to be strict. I'm looking to try to piece together the puzzle and to come out with a realistic and reasonable pshat halacha based on the situation. You understand what I'm saying? So you're looking for different pieces of information. You could always be machmir, you know, but why would people call me if Torah, Asr, Kasher? You know what I mean? It's not, that doesn't help anybody. You want to know what the halacha is, sort of middle of the road. And then also, people think this is hocus pocus, but very often the rabbi will look at each person in their place. So let's say someone just learned how to keep kosher. And they're messing up left and right. Because that's what happens when you first learn how to keep kosher. And I placed this and I did that. So I'm not going to come down on them. I'm gonna look for leniency for those people because, to be honest with you, if you say to them, well, you got to throw away the dishes, they could very well say, you know what? Maybe this isn't for me right now. Let's try that again sometime later. And it's not saying that by the halacha that I'm giving them, so I shall be makil. I'll be more lenient. But it's not saying that's not the halacha. That is the halacha. According to the opinion, that Yad Soledipo is hotter. That is the absolute halacha.
The only way you really give it a dishwater.
Yeah. You know, so you have to understand that. You have to understand what the distinctions are going to be based also on the individual who's asking the question. You know, I'm struggling with this now. I have a question. I don't know how to answer the question because even though I know the principles, you have to weigh what the ramifications of the question are going to be for the person who's asking. You know, so you have to ponder. You have to think about it. Now that I ask this question. Yes?
I would think it would be the other way around because I learned how to keep kosher very suddenly.
Uh-huh.
And I was very careful, more so maybe than someone who does it.
If you're not used to it, if you didn't find yourself just sort of accidentally, you know, I get those questions quite a bit with people that are starting out. Oh, I didn't realize I used the wrong thing. Do I, you know, what do I do with the spoon? Because if you're not used to doing those things, just being separate, naturally you're going to grab the thing that's closest. You're going to use the thing that's most available to you. All right, so you were good. Okay, the Gemara continues. And this is another important principle. So not only must it be Yad Soledet, but there's also another principle in Halacha of Shabbos that you all are familiar with. Most of you are actually in my Halacha of Shabbos class, right? In order to affect Bissel. Anybody know what that is? In order to be mevashel, in order to cook something on Shabbos, it has to be in a kli rishon. Very good. Kli rishon means a vessel is in which the food was cooked. Okay, either on the fire or not on the fire. What happens once you transfer the food from the from that vessel to another vessel? Then it's called, what's that called?
Klisheni.
A klisheni. And a klisheni does not have the ability to cook. That's what we're going to see in the Gemara. Okay? It says the Gemara. Amar Rav, third line. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdini. Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdini said, Pam Achas, one time, Nichnasi Achar Rebbe, Lebeis HaMerchat. I followed Rebbe Yudah Nasi into the bathhouse. They were on Shabbos, right? Ubikashti Lahaniach Lo Pach Shel Shemen Be'ambati. I wanted to take a small flask of oil and warm it up. It was cold. He was going to like smear oil all over himself, just pour it on himself, which, why not? I mean, we spray things on ourselves that he would have frowned on too, okay? Okay? But Amarli, and he said, told the klisheni v'tein. Take water in a klisheni, meaning not in the original kettle in which it was boiling. I guess in the bathhouse they had this boiling pot of water from before Shabbos. You know, and they would take from that water and they would wash themselves or whatever it was. So he said, you can't put the oily flask inside the kli rishon, but rather put it in the kli sheni, and then you can put it in there. Shemami na tzla. So I learned from this three things. Shemami na, first of all, I learned shemen yeshbo mishum bishol. Oil can be cooked if you heat it up to yatzo let it. Shemami na, and I also learned kli sheni eno mevasha. Right? A kli sheni cannot cook. That's how halachic sat. See a little lap by there? Kli sheni does not cook. Ushmamina hefshero zehu bishulo. Right? If you're just warming it up, that can be cooking also, even if you're just doing it not to cook it, but to warm it up to a certain temperature. Yeah.
Like a baby bottle.
Yes?
It would be the same. You put it into, if you could take hot water from the thing and put it in another thing.
Right.
And you could put the bottle in that.
Absolutely correct. Right. Absolutely correct. Now, but we're going to learn, by the way, that a kli sheni, according to some poskim, if it's too hot, so you have all these, you have, I need yad shaledet, right? And I also need kli rishon. So now what the commentaries do, and they do this quite a bit, is, well, what happens if it's not yad shaledet? What happens if it's 300 degrees in a kli sheni? Can that impart the taste or not?
Sure.
Such a machlokas. Because the Gemara talks about kli rishon, and it's not talking about kli sheni. Some poskim say, yes, if it's hot enough, right? If it was called yad nichveish, but the hand would burn. I mean, you scald your hand on it, then it would impart taste. So therefore, we believe, we poskim, that a kli sheni can be levashel, cook up to what we call a kedei klipa. Kedei klipa means a fingernail's width. Right, so let's say you took a piece of, this is a good example, you took a piece of raw meat and you put it in, you took a mug, like a cliche, like, you know how you make tea? Okay, so you took a piece of raw meat and you put it in your hot cliche. What would happen to the meat?
Disgusting.
What? How much?
Not a whole lot.
What would happen if you would cut it? You just cut the piece of meat, you got a cube of meat like this, and you put it in your mug. It would be gross, right?
Yeah.
Just hot water?
Just hot water.
Raw?
It would be raw on the inside.
Right.
What would happen on the outside?
A
little bit of brown on the outside. Uh-huh. And that's what the rabbis meant. That klisheni is mevashel kidei klipa. It cooks just a little bit. Right? So then how, if klisheni is mevashel a little bit, how could you put your bottle into the water on Shabbos?
That's
what I like that. Right.
Yes.
If klisheni cooks just a teeny bit, just a klipa, right? Klipa means a nail's width. How could you put the bottle in the water on Shabbos?
You just said it doesn't
cook. Cooks a teeny bit around the outside. Just it cooks just the outside edges, a nail's width.
That's liquid and that's a solid.
Because it's cooking the glass.
Correct.
The
bottle. Very good.
Kind of
correct.
But you have to do it. I mean, because you have to feed a baby. What else could you do?
Do it in a third vessel or keep water warm. You have to do a lot of things. It would be you'd try to find another way to do it. You know what I'm saying? Leave it in a warm place. It would just take you longer. There's a lot of things that you could do in order, but you don't do that. The reason is because the klipa is the bottle, not the water.
And then the milk is being warmed by the
bottle. Right, that you're warming with your water. Okay. So if you just look, there's a Tosfot, if you see on the right-hand side that I'm going to read for you. So also that's a question. He says, what's the difference between a kli sheni and a kli rishon? You know, this is halachically, right? It's not a temperature question. It's a It's a halacha question. I mean, you take water from the urn. The urn is a kli rishon. So if I put something in the urn, I'm cooking it on Shabbos. If I pour that water, same water, into a cup, and I put something in the cup, then I'm not cooking something on Shabbos. Yeah, just for practical purposes, we don't put things in klishenis usually, but just, it's not considered bisho. So Gemara Sotosa says, Tema, maishna klisheni mi kli rishon. What is the difference? The iyad so let it, if it's hot enough, afilu klisheni nami, then even a klisheni should be, if it's the same temperature, the iyan yad so let it, and if it's not hot enough, afilu kli rishon nami eino mevasha, then a kli rishon should also not cook. The yeshloma, I told you what answers, lefisha kli rishon mitoch she'amad al ha'or, a kli rishon, because it was on the fire, right? It was on the fire, dofiotam chamin. Then the walls of the pot retain their heat. Umachzik chomos man meruba. And it retains the heat for a longer period of time. And therefore, the kli rishon has the ability to cook. Velakach natnu bo shir, and that's what the measurement was. The kolz man sa yad so let it bo asr. As long as it's that temperature of yad so let it bo, it's prohibited. Ava kli seni, but a second kli, afagav di yad so let it bo, even though it's yad so let it bo, mutar, it's not prohibited. She'ein dof no tav chamin. Because the walls of the vessel are not hot, v'holech u'mit karir, and it cools off. Meaning, in klisheni, because you put it in a secondary vessel, the walls of the vessel are automatically cooling down whatever the liquid is inside of it. As opposed to a kli rishon, where the walls of the vessel are not. Okay, they're retaining the heat of the liquid. Yeah.
Well, actually, that's what I do in the morning. I put water in my coffee mug and microwave it so that the mug is warm when I put in my, then I pour it out and put in my coffee.
People do that, like at the fufu coffee shop, say warm. They give you a warm mug, right? They give you a warm. That warms up your mug. Let me stop you for a second. You raise a great question. So Rabbi Forrest writes in his book. So what's a microwave? Because in a microwave, is that a kli rishon or a kli sheni? Because in a microwave, by definition, the walls of the vessel are not heated. Only the food itself is heated. So we treat it like a kli rishon. Yeah, it transmits the heat. But anyway, yes, you were going to say.
So if you have a pot, you know, a water thing of water.
An urn?
An urn, thank you. The word urn has a different connotation.
Yes.
On Shabbos, if you put hot water in your mug and then pour that water out and put fresh water in to make your coffee.
Ooh. Still a klisheni. Still be a klisheni. I don't know if I got to ask that question. I got to look that one up. My gut says klisheni. Who cares if it's hot or not?
I care. Because I like coffee.
Because when you're making tea, so you pour it in one cup, right, and then you pour it through another cup. Right, that's a shlisi. But we don't say, well, you have to wait between cups. You understand what I'm saying? We don't make you wait. My gut would say that I think that would be okay. But that's Hilchos Shabbos. Let's stay there. Turn to page 2 for a second, please. Okay? Look in the box. Chom says, this is the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, see in the box? I'm reading you from the Shulchan Aruch, the Halacha. Chom shel kli rishon. So that's what he says. He says, if you have heat of kli rishon, of a first vessel, shehayad shel ledepo, that's of the temperature of yad shel ledepo, what did we say the minimum was? 110, I don't remember, 109 or 116, I don't remember. Now, by the way, this is great. So, you know, you're going to call me up and I'm going to say, well, did you measure the temperature with a thermometer? So what's the answer? No, God, no. How hot? So I'm going to say, how hot was it? And your answer will usually be?
Hot enough to put my hands in.
Either you're going to say it was, you'll either say it was hot, or you're going to say
lukewarm.
Yeah, it wasn't hot. You know what I'm saying? So I think that our general answers are going to tell you whether it was yad so let it go or not.
You just started frying up the egg and you realized pretty quickly.
Right, and it was still liquidy. Correct, right. Right. Well, that's... What? How hot? See, I would say if the egg started to cook, if it started to congeal, then it had already started to cook. As opposed to if it hadn't. I mean, how hot does the egg have to be to start to congeal?
Like on the sidewalk thing.
Hot.
I don't know, but you always see the...
Well, I'll take it. Now you have a halacha, take it to Beis Yaakov and figure it out. That's an important question. How hot does the neck have to be to congeal? All right? That's a good science question. Okay? Mavashel, it cooks the osher kulo, and it prohibits the whole food. So if... Now, the thing Sechanach dealt with a lot was, so let's say the meat that you bought was treif meat. It was accidentally treif. Because what they dealt with, there was no Rashkin, there was no empire, there was no whatever. You bought the meat, and you could very well find out afterwards that there was a problem with the animal. Okay? So you cooked the meat in your pot. So the question was, how hot was it? How much does it cook? So he says, mevashel kulo. Right? It completely cooks as long as it's that temperature. The oser kulo. And it prohibits the entire mixture unless, what did we learn? Unless it's what?
60.
Unless it's butter. Okay, we talked about pitul already. Aval chom shall kli sheni. But what if it's kli sheni? So let's say, for example, you took Parmesan cheese, right, and you put it in your, not chicken soup. No. You put it in your...
Chicken Parmesan.
Pick something milk. And your spaghetti, right? So you cooked up your spaghetti, and then you put it in the serving bowl. And what do you do before you serve it? Right? You sprinkle it with a little Parmesan cheese, and you serve it. Lovely. Is that kli rishon or kli sheni? Kli sheni. We're going to see this. That's not a good example because it's not liquidy, but that's a kli sheni. Okay. So does that heat of the whatever you want to call it, of the stew or whatever, does that now transfer and trafe up your dishes? You found out that the Parmesan cheese was trafe. Oops, happens all the time. Okay, you bought the wrong cheese, you picked up the wrong thing, you used to have a hechsher. How many times has that happened to you? You go to the store, you bought it, right? You used to have a hechsher, you checked it, done anymore. You just don't notice. I mean, you know, you don't realize how many things we pick up instinctively because we're so used to buying them, and you just, these things happen. Okay? So he says, avachom shel klisheni eino mevashel. Remember we learned that in the Gemara. Klisheni is not cook. The yesh omim, and some even say, shgam eino maslit velo mavliya, doesn't have the power, polate, to remove taste and to absorb taste. The yesh omim, and some say, the mikom makom hu maslit umavliya, nonetheless, it does have the power to infuse taste, the osher kidei klipa, and it prohibits up to a klipa, up to a finger breadth width or whatever. So let's say, for example, we're talking about a kli sheni, and the Parmesan cheese is on the top. Okay? That's exactly what you did. You had, soup or stew or whatever, you put the Parmesan cheese on, and you realize, oh my God, the Parmesan cheese is not kosher. So what do?
It didn't get through the bowl.
Excellent. It did not cook all the way. Even if you say, which we do, we are more stringent. Right? Even if you say that it's mevashel kidei klipa, nonetheless, it's still on top there. So what do you do? What I would do is, I wouldn't necessarily recommend, although in theory what you could do is skim off the top, take out the Parmesan cheese, and you could eat the rest of the soup. But most people I know would
dump
the soup. Right. You know, but the bowl, more importantly to us, the bowl is kosher. Even though the cheese was trafe. Why? Because that's the important question. What vessel was it in? Was it in a kli rishon? Or no, it was in a kli sheni. Since it's a kli sheni, we said kli sheni, at the worst, only cooks kidei klipa. Okay, only cooks a fingernail amount.
Except
okay?
The hot spaghetti would melt it.
That's why you toss the whole...
Right, but the reason I didn't use spaghetti, I switched to stew.
Right.
That's because we're going to learn there's another principle called dabar gush. Let's say something is pourable, but it still retains its shape, or something solid. So many folks can feel that solids retain their heat much longer than liquid stew. But okay, I hope I'm not scaring you. It's confusing. It's complicated. Nonetheless, what I hope you got out of this, or you're getting out of this, is that you have to know what kind of vessel was it in. Was it in kli rishon? Was it in kli sheni? Was it yad soledepo? Or was it ein yad soledepo? He says, v'roi lachus lizaher badava lechachila. I'm in the middle of the box. Here I am in the box. It's worthwhile to be careful, to be meticulous, lechatchila. A priori. Aval b'dieved mutar below klipa. U'bahadacha ba'al masagi. Unless you already did it, the Shulchan Aruch says, b'dieved. So you call me and you say, I did it already. Then you know, okay, b'dieved is permitted. And that's not a chumrah b'diavad. If a person did it b'diavad, then it's not mevashel because it's a klisheni, and that's halacha. We find it in the Gemara, and you're okay. Okay, so those are the principles of kli rishon. We did kli rishon. We did yad shel meret bo. We did kli sheni. And that's pretty much it for the kavan. Oh, I forgot one important thing. Yeah. There's also an intermediate stage. It's called iroi, pouring from one to the other. So what happens if you pour on from one thing to the other in the stage of pouring? Let's say I'm in the stage of pouring, soup into the bowl. Okay?
If your bowl is cold and you
So now, if let's say I have a pot of soup, right? If I put the milchik spoon into the fleishik soup, right? So then, in the fleishik bowl, in the fleishik, pot. So then the milchik spoon becomes straight, and I have to kasher it. What happens if I pour from the fleishik, pot into my milchik bowl? Then what? Is pouring like a kli rishon, or is pouring like a kli sheni? You say Rishon? Somebody got to say Shani, just so we can argue. Shani, thank you, okay. Right, so it turns out, what do you think I'm going to say? It's a machlokas, like everything else. So use machlokas, you can see it somewhere in the middle. Right, usually in the cases, by the way, the only reason that the time that this is relevant is Shabbos, because in Kashrus, where we are stringent in this area of pouring. It almost never happens that a person is pouring, except a very interesting case. What's a good case of an example where water is pouring or something is pouring out? It is not in the kli rishon itself.
You're talking about Shabbos?
No, on
Kashrus. Well, maybe if you're using a colander or something.
Okay, more simple example. Happens all the time. You did it today. Maybe you didn't do it today.
The cover of
the washing the dishes example.
Oh, okay.
Right. Is your water in the kli rishon? Is your water in the vessel in which it was boiled?
No.
When it's coming out of the tap?
No.
No.
No, it's not in the water heater, it's in pipes.
Correct. Is that a kli rishon? No. At the very most, that's iroi kli rishon. So again, remember, iroi, pouring of kli rishon. At the very most. So now I have A, it's pouring, and pouring of kli rishon, and B, right, it's, maybe it's not Yad so let it go, maybe it's not sufficiently hot. And C, not clear at all. And C, what else? I'm probably using soap, right? So it becomes much, now you're seeing that it's more difficult to trafe up your dishes when you wash them together.
Does soap make it better?
Soap makes it better. Much, much, much better. Right? It's always good to wash your dishes with soap anyway, but soap makes it a lot better from a kosher perspective. Okay?
So here's a good practical question.
Yes.
Your stove pot, okay, in between the burners. Spilling.
The classic in between the burner question. Yes.
On Monday you're making, you're making cream of mushroom soup and
great.
You spill that on the stove top.
Good.
And on Tuesday you're making spaghetti and you spill flaky spaghetti sauce on the stove top.
Good.
And it all mixes together.
Uh huh.
And then on Wednesday, it doesn't matter what you're making, but you take the utensil out and you put it down on the cover. I mean, you put it down on the stovetop
right. While
the oven's on.
Which is why I would always say, don't do that.
Well,
spoon rest.
Not the spoon rest. Put on the counter.
Right.
Most okay. There are you ask excellent question. There are two types of stovetops. They're the stovetops that I recommend, okay, just from a kosher perspective, that have, we'll call them for lack of a better word, some type of grid, right? Whether it's electric or not, where these are raised.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying? These are raised areas, okay? Since they're raised areas, the pot never rests directly on the surface. Right?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
So, and that area where the pot rests is continually koshering itself. Why? Because it's fire.
Okay.
Right? There's either a gas fire or it's an electric burner. So this area, wherever it is not a problem. It's never a problem. Why? Because it's always burning itself out. But then there are these other things called glass tops. Okay? And the glass top is one seamless surface where, again, this area is is continually costuming itself, unless it's one of those nifty newfangled ones which has magnetic momentum. I don't even know how it works, but am I right? There's one that's like a microwave in a certain kind of pot that agitates the food, and the place itself doesn't get particularly hot. Okay, very strange. I really don't recommend those, as you're going to see why. Okay, so these areas get hot. These areas, this in the middle area where the spill is, does not get hot. The disadvantage being, this stovetop is made in such a way that you can just slide things all over the place, so you don't have to keep it on a burner. Right? And from a cooker's perspective, it's great. But from a kosher perspective, not so great. It really isn't so great. Okay, and the time when this is really an issue is
Pesach.
Right, it's really an issue on Pesach. So now we have huge issues of can you kosher the glass top, can you not kosher the glass top? But a good rule of thumb would be, it's really, especially if there's no residue there, and you have the 24-hour period, or you clean it with a caustic cleaner. And let's say you clean it with 409, you know, you got to clean. Man, you're good. But let's say you're not so meticulous, and you didn't clean it, and you cooked something else. And I wouldn't say anybody would do such a thing. God forbid that you should do such a thing. Well, that's my question. Is there cheese residue? You know, let's say, for example, I fried up,
egg beaters with cheese.
Okay? And then I spilled something. So you got milkic residue. That's milk right there. You take your flasic pot that's hot, and you put it on that milk, you traced it up.
But why are you putting it there? You say that it doesn't have a such.
No, that's how they use those glass tops. Do you have a glass top?
No,
so then she doesn't slide stuff over? Or he? Right, instinctively, because it's all one flat top. Yeah, whatever, to leave it to cool or whatever. Now, isn't that, I think that was part of the purpose of how it's used. Yeah.
But every time I use it, I wipe it down. But I don't always use 409. I'll use a sponge and water.
What's the difference again? No, it's not like that. The caustic agent helps in that it defiles any kind of taste. So let's say you had really milk or whatever. Even if you cleaned it off, the taste that would be infused is the same. As opposed to if there was a caustic agent there, you would not have to wait 24 hours and it would not have the ability to then trape up your next pot. Right. I remember we learned that again last week.
Right.
Okay.
But right. Let's say it already.
All the residue is
hours later.
Is the residue still there?
Yeah, let's say 20 hours later.
And the residue is still there? If the residue is still there, your cream of mushroom soup is still there, and you put your flaky pot on it,
right?
You just strafed up your flaky pot.
Okay.
Hot, if it's hot.
But let's say, it's not that I put the flaky pot on it. Let's say I put a silicone utensil on it, and that area in between the burners, it's not glass. The area in between the burners is maybe 200 degrees because the oven's on.
What's the pot? 200 is very hot, by the way. What's the pot? Is the pot cool or the pot hot?
Let's say it's hot.
And then the hot pot, I can't think of a rhyme, but makes it bad. The hot pot itself has the ability to recook whatever, you got cheese down there, right?
Okay.
If I put a hot pot on coagulated cheese, what's going to happen?
It's going to cook the cheese.
Even from the outside?
Right, from the outside.
Right, okay. It's a problem.
It's not the pots I'm worried about, it's the utensil.
Okay, you put your utensil down on there. It's always a good rule of thumb. I always keep like a napkin and put the utensil on the side.
Okay, yeah.
I just don't recommend
Let's say by accident you didn't, or somebody was cooking for you.
You have to ask, again, so the rabbi would have to ask the following questions. A, how hot was the stove?
Right.
Because the utensil itself was no longer in the pot.
Right.
Utensils, if you take them out of the pot, they cool very quickly.
Okay.
You understand? Is utensil itself probably wasn't hot enough? Was it Yad Soledipo? Hard to say. That's question number one.
Yeah, probably not if it's silicone.
Right.
You know,
question number two, how hot was the stovetop?
Right.
Was there residue on it, or was it really clean? All those questions are relevant.
Got it.
Now, by the way, if you've been in this class for a few weeks, which most of you have, you should begin to hear why I'm asking these questions. How hot was it? Mm-hmm. Was there time? Did it wait 24 hours? You know, it's not, again, not science fiction. There's a halachic process to it. Yes, Beth.
Now
I'm scaring her about her stove.
No, not about that.
Yeah.
Say a regular gas stove. That area in between is like trace, like the bottom of the sink. Like you shouldn't put. Like say tonight I made garlic bread in that the package thing.
Yeah.
So I took it out of the oven. I put it there.
Right, but there's a paper in between. You didn't put it straight on, right?
Right, and it was in the bag.
Correct.
Yeah. So if you have like a
foam
tinfoil, you can put it there.
I would put it there.
The oven bond.
Well, how hot is the oven? And there's no residue, correct?
So if it's clean, then it's okay.
Yeah, I think you're okay. But if it's not clean, right, if it's not clean, then you really could have problems if the food touches. It's the same thing, by the way, with counters.
Yeah.
People have, by the way, milchik and pleshik counters. And the reason they do that is a very simple reason. Again, if there's residue on the counter, it's not that the counter is going to cook as anything, but you put a hot pot directly on the counter, right? That's why, then that could cause a problem if there's milk or whatever, if you're not careful. And it's like, that's very easy to do. Yeah, so, Aviva. Wow, I didn't even like touch all the stuff I wanted to get to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would go for soy cheese.
You would go for soy cheese? I know, by the way, there are people that are vegetarians. They don't have half these problems because they never bring meat into their house. It's all milchik. Okay, let's just... What time you got?
8:51.
Okay, good. I've got a couple more minutes. We're going to do one more principle. I don't want
to... You started to say something about a frying pan.
Yeah.
But you never finished.
I started with the frying pan question, right? I never finished. Okay, so let's examine. Is the frying pan, they fried it up, is it Yad Soledepo? Yes, it was. Correct? Was it liquid?
Yeah.
So the frying pan is?
Tray.
Tray. The frying pan was tray. Okay, so now the next question is, can they kosher it? And how do they kosher it? Right? I'm not going to tell you today. You raised the excellent question. Okay, we're going to learn the different forms of koshering, but the question is, what is frying? Is frying direct heat, or is frying like boiling? We'll learn these things later. And frying is a very good question. Anyway, we'll discuss these later. Remind me to bring up this question when we talk about koshering, which we'll probably do when we get closer to Pesach. Another issue that happens, it almost never happens in our kitchens, is what happens if you're cooking two things side by side, and one touches the other? How much does it infuse taste? How much taste does it infuse? Nobody cooks leishik mogen before milchik on the stove at the same time?
Leishik and milchik at the same time.
It's a problem. Most people don't. It's an issue.
Okay, so you're making a chicken soup and you're throwing macaroni and cheese for dinner.
Right. I make a big thing of meat soup. It sits there on the stove for hours and hours.
Right. So now what happens, it's a very good question, what happens if you have splatter issues? Right, which is very relevant. You have issues of splattering. And by the way, people tell you need to have two soaps. You don't need to have two soaps. It just makes it more complicated if you don't. Right? Most of us don't. I don't. You can just have plenty kosher kitchen with one stove.
My younger daughter has two stoves, two refrigerators, two dishwashers, a pain in the neck.
Uh huh. Okay. So let's look just for a very short minute at the bottom of page one. Turn back to page one. I just wanted to teach you two more principles. Okay, because I really did get through most of what I was trying to get through. The second principle is, let's say hot food touched something else. Right? So or let's say another example would be, I had a milchik spoon. And I accidentally, Beth bought a roast. Beautiful roast, cost her $40. Right? Judah had a conniption, but she said, I might as well eat it anyway. Beautiful, it's Yontif, fine. And then she accidentally took a milchik fork. I mean, really milchik. It was Ben Yomo. She had used it to make macaroni that day. It was milchik. Oh, yeah. And she stuck it in the fleishik, in the fleishik roast. Right? So, there's no liquid, right? How much taste is infused, or let's say it just touched the fleishik roast.
It's sort of like
it's hot.
Just
it's while it's cooking.
The piece out.
While it's cooking. How much?
The whole piece with the fork with it.
Ah, so how much? To what degree? So that's what our Mishnah is going to tell you. So the Mishnah says, Naga b'charso shel tanur. This is a Mishnah from Pesachim. Okay? So your Korban Pesach is roasting. So the halacha is the Korban Pesach has to have roast from a fire. It cannot roast from a pot from the fire. And any part that roasts, it has to really literally be roasting. The whole thing has to be roasting, which of course, nobody should have any problem with because it sounds delicious. But if it touches anything, so the Mishnah says, Naga b'charso shel tanur. What if the Paschal lamb touched the edge of the oven? So the Mishnah says, Yiklof et mekomo. Yiklof. Klipa, right? What do we create? Klipa. You should peel off, take a little bit of the place where it touched. Meaning, it doesn't trape up the whole Korban Pesach. and only trips it up what we call, remember we learned that? Kedei Klipa. Okay? But Nataf Beirotro Al Hacheres Mechazar Eilav. Let's say the sizzle dripped down and then splattered back onto the Pesach. When you made a Korban Pesach, you had to be really careful about a lot of different things. Not only being kosher for Pesach, but a lot you couldn't touch the walls of the oven. You had to be really, really careful. So then the Mishnah says, Yitol es makomo. Okay, that's kedei netila. Netila means taking off a certain amount, and the Pesach says it's about an inch. Okay, so if you have a splattering issue, right? If you know where the, let's say, you know, where the tray splattered on the kosher, you take off a kedei netila, an inch of your delicious roast, right? That's how much you have to take off. It would not trafe up the whole thing.
Not immediately obvious why this principle should have anything at all to do with kosher. It's a totally different concern.
Why?
There's nothing unkosher about touching the wall of the oven.
Yeah, the Korban Pesach itself is not kosher. It's not edible. You're not allowed to eat it. What does kosher mean? Kosher means you can't eat it. So there are many forms of non-kosher. If a guy cooked it, it's not kosher. The food might be 100% kosher.
This is one of the rules of the Korban. There's many other rules why a Korban would in any other circumstances be kosher. But,
right.
But the Korban is improper, and so it's not a good Korban.
Can you eat it?
No, because a Korban is you can't put a Korban to a...
So I think we're disagreeing, but we're using different terminology. Meaning, to my mind, if you can't eat it, it's not kosher. Remember when we talked at the very beginning about the fruits and the vegetables that had truma and masa not taken off? A lot of people don't know. I was talking to somebody this week, and I mentioned this idea of taking off truma and masa, and people don't know how it's a very serious thing that you should just take off your 100th, as we discussed, and then you can eat it. So you should just let people know, if you talk to people about it, that they should buy Israeli produce, but take off the tithes in the proper way. Is the fruit, can you say the pepper is not kosher?
In a sense, but in a different sense.
Right. I mean, we're agreeing, but we're just using different terminology. So I just want to emphasize. I mean, there are halachas we're not going to go into, but then there are two principles. One is called kedei klipa, and one is called kedei netila. One is enough to peel like a small amount, and the other one is kedei netila, a larger amount of taking off. Okay. Here. So look on page 2 just for a second. So the halacha is, there's a halacha that says, I mean, we're not going to go into it, but the halacha questions whether something hot falls on something cold or something cold falls on something hot. And there's a difference between the two. The halacha distinguishes whether the top thing is hot or the cold thing is hot, or the bottom thing is hot. So look at Dalet, the very bottom of Dalet. The Shulchan Aruch says, bottom of Dalet on page 2. When is this true that the food is considered totally not kosher? It mixes all together. When, let's say, your non-kosher salami falls into your chalet, because the sauce brings the absorption of prohibited foods, and mixes it with the entire food. Aval isur ben chan ben kar, but let's say something that's prohibited. Treif salami. So nafal al hatzli she'et al ha'esh, and it falls on your steaks that are grilling on the grill. Eino oser ela kedei netila. Then it only prohibits it what we call kedei netila, but who k'ovi rochev etzba. It's about the thickness of an etzba, of a thumb. We say you take off an inch. Now it could very well be that if somebody drops a piece of treif meat on your steak, it might only be an inch thick. Sorry, I can't help you. But if it's a roast, right, and somebody drops something on, then you slice off that kedei netila, and the rest of it would be kosher. So if there's no sauce, if there's no liquid combining things, then the level of kosher, it doesn't become batel, it doesn't become negated into it, but it trafes up the top layer of whatever it is you're cooking. Now, nowadays, I've never gotten a question about this. I mean, most times, it's, you know, because people just don't, I don't know. People don't really have treif things that are cooking other treif things. And Shulchan Aruch talks about what happens if I'm cooking kosher and somebody's cooking treif next to me in the same oven. I mean, I've never come across that before. But I imagine that what happened was, I mean, it was very prevalent. People didn't have private ovens. So there was public ovens, and you would rent space in the oven, and if you wanted to cook your whatever it was, you know, and then it accidentally touched, and that was, those are the issues that came up. But nowadays, because of our magnificent wealth, everybody gets their own oven, and these issues don't really come up. So I just wanted to raise your awareness of it. The last thing I want to tell you about is a principle called kavush. Okay? Kavush is soaking. Items that are soaked have the ability to infuse taste if they're soaked for 24 hours. The example I will give you is the following. What?
Like marinated.
Marinated. Excellent. That's exactly the point. If I take a tea bag and I put it in cold water, what's going to happen?
Eventually it'll become...
Right. Over 24 hours it'll become tea. So the halacha is that something that is soaked for 24 hours has the ability to infuse taste. So let's say there's a big difference if you put the cold milk in the plastic cup, or... I mean, the question is really about Caleb. It's not a good question. But let's say you put the... you're marinating something. Marinating is an excellent example. Right? Or, and you you know, you marinate the food for 10 minutes and you realize that the sauce is not kosher. Okay, then you can rinse it off and it's fine. But if you marinate it for 24 hours, that marinating process has the ability to infuse taste. Similarly, if something is marinating in sharp liquids like vinegar or brine, or especially salt, a salt, heavily salted mixture, right? Well...
That's
sweet. Yeah, it is. It's true. That has the ability to infuse taste in a very short period of time, 6 to 10 minutes. Just by, because, the, again, it's a chemical process, and the sharpness of the liquid has the ability to transfer taste in a very quick period of time. So, if let's say you made, I don't know, some kind of salad, and it's got a dressing, like a lemon dressing. So, I can't think of a good example, because we normally we don't soak things in that way. But if there was some non-kosher item in there, let's say, for example, you know, yeah, right, but how could you, it would have to be something you could pull out. But would it shape up the whole coleslaw? You know, I don't, right. Let's say, I don't know, Uri Moser puts a piece of meat in the coleslaw. So now you want to know, is the coleslaw fleshic or not? So, what's in coleslaw? It's mayonnaise, and what's the other liquid?
Vinegar.
Oh, it's got vinegar, so almost immediately it will be. So if you're just, but if you're marinating or whatever it is, so that would make the determination.
Salad dressing that you normally bought, you're making a salad, and then discovered they lost their hexer.
Yeah, and you put it in a salad.
You put it.
There's no real way to wash off a salad. The only question would be, does it trape up the dish?
Right.
So again, if it was cold and it was, you know, then it does not.
You've got to be some meat and some milk.
Yeah. They say, by the way, meat and milk, because meat is not a good example, because meat has a lot of crevices and it's almost impossible to wash off. You'd have to take off, you'd have to slice off the edges. But if you took something else, maybe...
But if you cook the udder of a cow, which is kosher...
Yeah, but that's a different example. It's a totally different example.
But, right, they have to cook it in a special pot.
Right, that's a special case, because the udder is a piece of meat that has milk
there's
in it,
milk.
Natural
there's
milk in it.
The meat.
They say, by the way, it's an incredible delicacy. That it's supposed to taste wonderful. Don't frown. How do you know until you try it? So let's just review. I'm sorry. I hope it wasn't too many things. We learned about the infusion of time, of taste. We learned about liquids or fatty foods. If it's dry and cold, you're in good shape. If it's cold and not dry, you're still in good shape unless you leave it for too long. We learned about heat. We learned the principle of yad so let it bo, which means... If your hand is burned by it, we said the minimum was 110, 115 degrees, okay? And we learned the principle of kalim, kli rishon, and kli sheni, and the various ramifications thereof, and how in order to enact absolute bishul, you have to have a kli rishon, and kli sheni then is another reason to be more lenient. And then finally, we discussed shelf tops. I'm not entirely sure why. And then finally, we turn to practical applications. And finally, we turn to the principle of kavush, of soaking. That has the ability, and we didn't even talk about salting. The reason I didn't talk about salting, the halacha is salting is very capable of infusing taste. The reason I didn't talk about salting is because nobody I know does it. Anybody here salt to preserve their meat? Anybody here salt their meat anymore, or chicken at all?
We used to do it,
but it's a big principle in the Shulchan Aruch, but nobody here does it, so I skip it.
There, when they kosher using salt, it pulls out.
Just like it pulls out,
it
has the ability to pull it.
It thousands of years and know that
we really should bring a piece of meat and kosher it, because it's a little bit criminal that nobody's ever seen a piece of meat being kosher.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I think we got to do it.
Everybody should know how to do it.
Yeah, we got to do a demonstration, because God forbid if, I don't know, if the United States falls apart, the economy goes bad, and we have to end up using our own meat sometime that is not fully prepared, I think you should know how to kosher a piece of chicken. And that's probably worth it. What? You want to do shkita? I'm thinking for the man Seder, but that, I don't know. We'll have to see. Anyway, okay, so next week, there's two more ways of transferring taste. One is called reah, which is aroma. It's in a close proximity. And the second one is called zeya, or steam. And those have great, great ramifications for lids, enclosed pots, steamers, but even more, ovens, toaster ovens, and microwaves. So we're going to discuss ovens, toaster ovens, and microwaves next week. Leave you on a cliffhanger. Have a good week, everybody.